You know, in today's world, it seems the best treatment is reserved only for a few. Well, Discover wants to change that by making everyone feel special. That's why with your Discover card, you have access to 24/7 live customer service as well as $0 fraud liability, which means you're never held responsible for unauthorized purchases. Finally, no matter who you are or where you are in life, you'll feel special with Discover. Learn more at discover.com/creditcard. Limitations apply. Kind of crazy.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
It's on and cracking.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Talk, George Kittle in the back of the end zone.
So when you're talking about your quarterback, are you talking about the game manager, George?
There's no one that manages the game quite like him, isn't there? We can't do any of that work unless he's the guy throwing the ball.
Today's guests, host of HBO's Real Sports, Brian Gumbel, Super Bowl champion and NFL On Prime video analyst Andrew Whitworth, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer, and now it's Rich Eisen.
That's right. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. We are live here on the Roku channel. We are live here on this Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio affiliate, Sirius XM, Odyssey, and more. We say hello to our podcast listeners. Whenever you want to take in these 3 hours, just make sure you are also aware that you can check out the Overreaction Monday podcast. Chris Brockman and I recorded that after Monday show. Lots to overreact to. Susie Schuster and Amy Trask with the latest edition of What the Football later on today. Kevin Harlan, whose call of last night's Monday Night Football game on Westwood One, no doubt will be front and center for that podcast. That'll be out later on today. All 3 hours of the show as well is available for you. What a great show we have in store. Bryant Gumbel is on this program because the Real Sports series, the longest running series in the history of HBO, 29 years and over 300 episodes, finishes up tonight with a 90-minute retrospective. And Bryant will be here in less than 20 minutes to talk about that and so much more. Andrew Whitworth is in studio from Prime Video, and his Los Angeles Rams are 7-7, currently in a playoff position right now as we're entering Christmas week. 3 weeks to go. He's in studio hour number two. Albert Breer in hour number three to tell us what is going on with everything in the National Football League that you need to know. We also have Overreaction Monday, the segment here on a Tuesday show. There is lots to check out. And one last thing as you get ready to take in this program, bear with us. It's raining outside.
Dude,
so it's raining here in Los Angeles. So bear with us. It's kind of weird. And we don't know people know what to do. No, that's not. It's not. I don't think that's completely accurate. I don't think it's completely accurate. Good to see you over there, Chris. How are you?
I'm getting through it. I was a little stunned this morning. Okay. Knocked me on my back, my heels.
Okay.
I didn't even get dressed. This is just what I slept in.
Mike, how are you? Good to see you, Mike.
I didn't give up, and I'm back to pants. So I'm good.
Oh, hey.
This just in.
We shamed him into pants.
We shamed me back into pants.
What's up, TJ?
You know, can we spend some of our time with Bryant, maybe talking him out of his decision in Real
you know
Sports?
What? Because I know, right?
I mean, come on, man. This thing's been on since the dawn of television.
Right. I cannot wait to watch that tonight.
We need Real Sports.
I think that may be what we need to do.
They can't end Real Sports, man.
I think it's happening.
Incredible stories.
The retrospectives
over the years.
In the can. I mean, I don't know. Favre retired multiple times.
That's true. That's true. Brady came back.
I know what I'm saying.
Why not?
Maybe we'll spend. Don't go. Please don't go.
Leonard retired multiple times.
We're hanging on to him like Van Gundy on Alonzo Morning. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, please.
We're down
please
on the ground.
Don't go. I'm totally down with that.
Oh, and by the way, James Harden, the beard.
Finally.
Yeah, how about the Clippers looking great, right? The Knicks coming to the downtown Hoops Dojo.
Nobody's talking about it, but the Clips have won 8 in a row. They look amazing.
I know. Maybe we'll talk about it today.
Out there.
Harden was old school, step back, get a 4-point play last night.
Kawhi Leonard is just solidifying what I told you every year. He is one of the greatest players still to this day.
Well,
nobody's talking about it.
Well, I mean, Christmas Day is coming up. We've got triple header in the NBA, in the NFL, and obviously it's a big day in the NBA. But let's start with the Monday night game to wrap up week 15. I am a guy that likes the bad news first. Are you?
Oh, interesting.
Are you? I got good news and bad news. They always say I've got good news and bad news. And then what do you want first? I'm always wanting the bad news first.
Yeah, get it out of the way.
Get out of the way.
Right,
and make me feel good at the end.
Let's end this on a positive
note. Am I right?
I like happy endings.
Okay. So, well, I mean, in terms of stories.
And stories.
But here's the deal.
Watch out.
Since I'll shoot the Philadelphia Eagles fans with the bad news first. Here's the bad news. It's not looking good at all.
No.
I mean, the bad news is it looks like the Eagles are a flawed team that won games in lucky style, not plucky style. The 10 wins that they're still sitting on right now with a three-game losing streak, their first three-game losing streak in since 2021. So it's been a while since we've seen this from them. And they look like they were playing with a bug on Monday night. Like Jalen Hurts comes in, he flies in on a private plane to stay away from his teammates so he doesn't get anybody else sick. But sure, let's just shove him in the middle of a 22-man scrum later on multiple times. That's for another day. That's one way to win the battle is just breathe on people when you're in the brotherly shove. But he comes out looking terrific, actually. The Eagles scored on their opening drive, and he was the first play was him running, and it's just like, okay,
15 yards,
little rope-a-dope. He's supposed to be sick, and he's a nice sick play, if you will, to start, and then you see the Seahawks end zone paint on his right shoulder the rest of the game because he slid into the end zone to start the scoring touchdown. Eagles go on top, and then the defense now that is coordinated by Matt Patricia now looked a little bit more in tune. But just when you thought they should start to separate, they don't. And then you start to think, wait a minute. They made a coordinator change in week 15. You know, we had Nick Sirianni on this program. He said nothing. And nobody knew anything. And Sean Desai, the DC, he's still the defensive coordinator. He didn't say a word. He was meeting with the crew. Joe and Troy said he met with us and didn't say anything. Total pro about it. But they made a defensive coordinator change in week 15. What does that tell you? That they feel like they've got the guys in the room. It's just a different set of eyes and a different scheme. But then there are just moments where they just don't seem to find that gear like the Bills did in week 15. Don't seem to find the gear like the Niners can find it right now. They don't seem to have that gear like the Ravens seem to have. And that's a problem when you're trying to defend your conference championship because they don't make the right plays and weird stuff happens in Seattle to begin with. And could you imagine? Okay, like your quarterback doesn't fly with you. You're wondering if he's healthy enough to play. And playing at night in Seattle, you feel like you're in on a different planet. Weird stuff happens there. And now for your defense, you're hearing a different voice in the helmet, and it's a different voice all week. And so you're doing things differently on the fly in a Monday night game in Seattle. And Drew Lock starts to drive 98 yards on you to end the game and make plays to win the game. And Seattle comes up with the sticks around and sticks around and sticks around and then hits you with their longest drive of the season with their backup quarterback who didn't know he was starting until the very beginning of the game for him. And they were able to overcome things in a way that the Eagles succumbed. And that's a problem. At least the Niners got their three-game losing streak out of the way in the middle of the season before their bye. This is December. And you're throwing it up, you know, into double coverage. And you're not even throwing it to A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith. You're throwing it to your third-string wide receiver picked off.
Quez Watkins.
And then you give up the touchdown and you still have timeouts left. And you're at midfield with 20-some-odd seconds to go with two timeouts to go. And you can definitely set up your field goal kicker who has shown he can boot it from 60 yards before. And you decide to go up top. picked off again. Although I must say, I don't think Love got his second foot down. And I think it was obvious that his foot never hit the ground.
Yeah, his momentum just kind of carried.
I don't know how the hell that got through replay, as Stans is called. But
I thought his toe did get
hit. Initially I did, but then you could see a replay where it looked like it hit. But it's still an incredible play that you shouldn't be. You shouldn't be. You know, I know you want to throw it to AJ Brown, but be smart about it. You got two timeouts to go. But weird stuff happens, like Jason Kelce finally getting called for what he said he's been warned about for a long time, which is moving the football up before snapping it for a brotherly shove play that they get called 5 yards on for a penalty, and then run it on third down. It's just weird. They just make weird choices, weird plays, and then your quarterback says this after the game. This is wild. Jalen Hurts, post-game, stepping to the podium and saying something that leads you to believe the guys aren't in the room after all.
I've been talking about execution all year. Been on the same page. Everyone been on the same page. And we didn't execute. I don't think we're committed enough. Just got to turn it around. It's a challenge that we have to embrace. Just continue to see it through.
What do you mean by that, about being committed enough?
Commitment. I don't know more than that. I had a dictionary on me now. I don't know how else to say that. We got to pick ourselves out of this. I ain't really too fond of the, you practice the same habits, you're getting the same results. And we have to, make a internal change in how we attack things, how we come to work every day. It starts with the little things, how committed we are to doing what we're doing. And it all starts with me, the quarterback.
Wow. Man, note to members of the press, always have a dictionary or thesaurus handy. Okay, you're committed. Because what that is infused with is that means people are not giving it their all or can't buy in because there's something happening. Does Nick Sirianni need to make another coordinator change at this late juncture in December? Ooh. Is that what he's referring to? Jeez. Is he referring to people not practicing that hard? I can't imagine he's referring to his offensive line. Is he referring to some of his skilled position players? With lack of, with all due respect, the offensive line looks pretty skilled. You know what I'm saying? Somebody, like, who is he referring to? He does throw himself there at the end because he's always that guy, looking in the mirror type guy. But what does he mean by that? And is there like a no way out, like mole hunt on for who's that person that's not coming to practice committed? Who's showing up in the game not committed? Who's not committed? What's he referring to? Because there's always been something up with Philadelphia all year long. Mm-hmm. And nobody's putting their finger on it, and you're always wondering, is it something going on behind the scenes? And when he says that, it kind of lends credence to that theory, narrative, whatever you want to call it. And then to make matters even worse, here's the last part of the bad news, Philly fans. Jerry Jones is happy. Oh, now that's got to make you, really upset, because Dallas is currently back in first place right now because of the Seattle loss.
What did you think of that Seattle ending last night on Monday Night Football?
It was marvelous. I watched every bit of it. I was thought I was about to doze. And then when they made those two exciting plays at the end, I couldn't sleep till 4 this morning because of the impact that it can have on our year and our season.
I mean, the Eagles turned Jerry Jones into Fernando Lamas Sr. Marvelous, just marvelous. little
you
Billy Crystal.
Look marvelous.
There you go. Very good.
I was about to doze.
It's marvelous.
You look.
You look marvelous.
Marvelous. Marvelous.
When was the last time somebody said doze?
Doze.
I was about to doze.
I mean, he woke up Jerry Jones.
Hey,
he couldn't go to sleep.
I couldn't sleep at all last night.
Now, the good news.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. We have so much bad.
Here's the good news. There's still three games left.
Hey. Yep.
The good news is it's not just three games left. It is the easiest three-game schedule for anybody in the NFL the rest of the way, believe it or not. That's what I'm seeing.
No easy games in the NFL, Rich.
I got it. Two games against the Giants. Well, all right, and Tommy Cutlets is involved in some local pizzeria in Brolio about
have you seen this story?
about jacking up his fee on the locals, and you know, word is he's not happy with the way that he's constantly being asked about, you know, doing social media videos for the team, and
he's signing autographs doing the Sopranos and whatever. Today, Rich.
What up, dude? I don't want to. All I'm just saying is, you know,
he just wants to play ball, guys.
You know, the headline of the Daily News saying, you know, we take the Cutlets to go. And then Arizona comes into their house. And I know Arizona beat Dallas and what have you. But you all start getting backed up this time of year when you're out of it. And I know you're playing for pride for these teams and whatever. But the Eagles, three more wins. They can go three wins after these three losses. And if they win out and if Dallas wins out, I have checked with NFL research, Philadelphia wins the NFC East. Oh. They still, if you will, control their own destiny.
Whack.
Even with all of that, even with Jerry Jones feeling marvelous and no dozing now because the Seahawks came back on the Eagles.
It's so marvelous.
They've got control of everything. And maybe, just maybe, there are the guys in the room will look in the mirror and basically say, we've got this. They can be 13-4 at the end of the season, which, by the way, I think they would have signed for before the season. Hey, you win the division, you're 13-4. The one seed, I think that bird has flown, to use the phrase. That thing is done. You're going to have to pull it together, win three in a row, win two games, and then go to San Francisco and get back to the Super Bowl. At least they now have, I believe, complete clarity on what their path is and what is the task and challenge ahead of them. That's the good news. The good news is you still control your own destiny. You've got two home games against two teams you should beat, although one of them is a division opponent, and you never know. The other one went to the western side of the state and put the Steelers on the griddle by going in and winning there. So you never know, but you should win them, and you still have the opportunity to win them and figure it out. Whatever is happening there, it's Nick Sirianni's gig to figure it out. That's the good news. We'll talk about Seattle later on in this program. I can't wait to ask Andrew Whitworth to decipher what the word committed out of Jalen Hurts' mouth meant. He'll be in studio hour two, Albert Breer hour three, but can't wait to chat with one of the all-time greats, a goat of this industry. His name is Brian Gumbel, and we're all saying farewell to Real Sports tonight.
Inside look at Hollywood with Michael Rosenbaum.
Let's get inside of my father, John Glover. You know, we watched Hawkville, and most of these episodes I never saw.
I didn't watch the show.
You never once saw yourself on Smallville.
In the beginning, I used to look at myself all the time and love to. And then as I get older, I stopped.
Why is that?
I don't know. Maybe because I'm older.
I was going to talk to you about that because you're 79.
Yeah.
How old do you feel?
11.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Wherever you listen.
Stacking Benjamins with Joe and his good friend OG not only has great financial insight, it's laid back with humor too.
Joe talks with Stacking Deeds co-host Crystal Hammond.
I've always been a fan of nosy neighbors. I want nosy neighbors. They can tell you what's going on 10 times faster than you would know.
Again, what's she talking about, Doug?
Really?
We're repairing neighborhoods, but then we're into nosy neighbors. And
yeah, that's a career off of that.
Find out more by searching the Stacking Benjamins podcast, wherever you listen.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. It truly is a gold standard. I mean, gold might even be devaluing the standard that Real Sports has set over its 29 seasons of storytelling. It is the most honored sports journalism program on TV with 37 Sports Emmy Awards. And I'm hoping one of those Emmy Awards was for editing, because tonight's episode is the series finale. It's a 90-minute retrospective of the 29 seasons of storytelling. And the host of that fantastic program, Brian Gumbel, here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Brian?
I'm fine, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to see you. Good to see you.
Thank you. Life is good. Can't complain.
What is going on in your brain when you hear about the series finale of Real Sports, Brian?
You know, I'm past the melancholy stage. Hillary came into me about an hour ago and just said, so how you feeling about tonight? I said, you know what? It's kind of out of my hands. I mean, I did it. It's pretty much left to the editors now. And I'm as curious as anyone to see what it looks like.
Okay. So it is shot. There is no live element to it tonight. We're in the can.
We finished shooting this one on, I think it was November 21.
Okay.
Shot it. All that's left to be done was the editing of it and the editing of the pieces that are involved.
Okay. So why, Brian? Why 20? I know, listen, 29 years is a heck of a run, but why now, do you think?
I guess the simplest answer, Rich, is that I couldn't see myself doing another 3 years. And as you well know, networks don't do 1 year contracts.
Right.
And I had to ask myself, could I see myself doing this another 3 years? Would my heart be really in it? And the answer was no. And so that only left me one decision, and that was say goodbye.
So not even just a 1 year deal. Was that even discussed for making it around 30 at all? Brian?
No, it really wasn't discussed. I guess if I'd have been a smarter guy, I would have the last time signed it for 4 years and we'd been done. I've never been real good at looking ahead, and math was never my strong suit.
So. Okay. So what would you say, what pieces would you want to see tonight? I mean, if you had your druthers, what stands out to you over the 29 seasons?
I tend to think of my own pieces first. Mm-hmm. But you know, we had a lot of great work by a lot of great people. And I think what the show tried to do tonight, rather than just say, here's a clip of this and here's a clip of that, we broke it down into themes that guided our show over the years. Themes like safety and security. We did a lot of things on health issues, health of athletes. That's one theme. Another theme was the underdog. Another theme was characters. Another theme was power and money, those kinds of things. And so we kind of separated out that way. It was very, very difficult for us to try to figure out how to fit close to 1,200 pieces in a 90-minute program.
I think accountability, too, Brian. That's one word that would leap out to me that your show was absolutely great at and crucial in our sports world for sure. Because there are some characters. I mean, I know what you mean by characters. You're probably talking about just like protagonists in a piece, or maybe somebody that might be of you know, quirky interest or what have you. But there's been some characters, Brian.
There's been a lot of characters
that you needed to hold some feet to the fire. Is there one that stands out to you that you're glad that your show did over the 29 years?
I mean, they run the gamut. They run from heads of countries, as was in the case of camel jockeys, to misguided prosecutors, as was the case with Marcus Dixon, to guys who think they can do whatever they want because they're the head of something, as applies to Jerry Colangelo, it also applies to guys who own something and think they can do whatever, as Vince McMahon did. Generally it's true that those who sign the checks and those who wield the authority don't like to be questioned or asked to justify or clarify what they believe in.
And then there's just, again, what your show did over 29 years as well. And I'll just, you know, for the audience here, it's personal to me as well, because Susie worked on that show for a few years, and she still talks about the pieces that she produced. going to Europe abroad with Frank DeFord to hold Juan Antonio Samaranch's feet to the fire is something that she's very proud of. And I'm just wondering, do you think there'll be another show like this that has the budget and the ideas and the support to say, go do it? Something like that?
Brian? I think those are three separate questions, the budget, the ideas, and the support. They get three different answers. I mean, the ideas, yeah. I mean, everybody can come up with the ideas. The budget, it depends. It would have to be an outfit that has very deep pockets. The support is another thing altogether, because as you know, the cross-pollination of networks and sports is now so ingrained that it's I think, naive to think that any media entity could just say, you know what, I'm going to go wherever this takes me and, you know, be damned with any of the relationships we've got. I'm not sure the front office would take a great view of that.
Did you ever get any pushback?
I never got any pushback from my people at HBO. Did I ever get pushback from the leagues? Yeah. Yeah, quite a all the time. All the time.
Which one stands out to you? I know I keep asking the same thing about standing out, but it's the 29 years. It comes to an end tonight, Brian.
I don't know. I mean, they take exception to small things sometimes. You know, I mean, I know, for example, they were not too fond when Roger Goodell came aboard and I said the first thing he should do is make sure he finds out where Tagliabue kept Gene Upshaw's leash. They weren't real fond of that one.
Well, I mean, you were such a crucial figure in the growth of NFL Network, Brian. You're the first voice of Thursday Night Football, which, by the way, is now on Amazon, and Bezos is paying money, you know, like
I know.
Through the nose. And you were the first voice.
I listened to you the other day too. You did a great job.
Thanks, Brian.
Better than I ever did. But look, I'm glad they can compartmentalize things. I'm glad that they were able to say that I could be their adversary one day and their supporter another.
So did I gather from your answer that you don't believe there will be a show like Real Sports, period, again because of
I don't think so, Rich. And I'd say this too as another part of that same answer. The audience has changed. Audiences today are accustomed to watching things that are done, number one, in brief. And where the picture changes constantly and where, you know, their interest is sparked and things are moving like this. Long form journalism is rarely seen on television these days. And so I'm not necessarily sure there's a public appetite for it, but that's just me.
Is there somebody you asked to come on Real Sports and you said, I'll do the piece, we'll feature you, and you couldn't get that person's arm twisted enough to do it?
There are a lot of them. And there are a lot of stories that we couldn't do because they were moving targets. One of the difficult things about being a monthly, as we were, was you had to do things that, while they were timely, they couldn't be changing from minute to minute or day to day. For example, we couldn't do the PGA versus LIV controversy because we'd shoot it and it would be, you know, irrelevant 24 hours later. And so we couldn't do things like that.
So... do we find out tonight, Brian, what you've scribbled down on that yellow legal pad? Do we finally find out tonight? This is a 29-year edge of my seat question.
I don't believe that. There are better things to,
please,
there are better things
come
to
on.
Concern yourself with.
Come on. Honestly, nobody, you know, can just scribble down a note and then arch an eyebrow and ask a question quite like you. I don't know how your correspondents were able to handle the pressure at that moment, but do you honestly?
Yeah, I don't think you're right.
No, it's the truth, man. So
what did you
write down on those pieces of paper? What were you writing down? What were you scribbling?
Various things. Really? But I'll never say it. Hello.
You'll never reveal it. Come on.
No, I'll never reveal it. It's like, and every correspondent used to wonder the same thing, you know, what are you going to ask me? And I'd say, I don't know. I'd never tell them. I like surprises on TV.
Okay. What sports television do you watch now, Brian? Do you watch any?
I watch live events. I watch very little of the yelling back and forth. I enjoy some of it. I don't like a lot of it, but you know, I'm the old guy in the room. I don't expect my taste to prevail in modern television. I mean, I was laughing when you were talking about, you know, Jerry. What was he watching? What he might have been wearing as he watched last night's game.
Right.
I mean, I'm close to Jerry's age, so I kind of get that.
Dozing off on a Monday night game until the final throws.
That was me last night. I actually did doze off. I missed the Metcalf catch.
Okay.
But then I was back in time for the Smith and Gigba catch.
Okay. So that's, by the way, good timing on your part. That's your sports television tastes right now. What about Sunday morning football shows? And I'm not asking that because I host one, but I'm asking that because you were one of the first to ever do that on NBC, Bryant. So
you know what's really bizarre about when I look at the Sunday morning shows, and I, you know, I've told Hillary this, and she finds it hard to believe. Now they have 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 people doing them. Yes. I guess it's alone. I mean, I did it alone. You know, it's like it was a one-person job. Now it's a six-person job. I wish they'd have paid me six salaries. At most, I did it with one other person from time to time. But this show has completely changed now.
Look at that photo on the screen right there. Look at you. NFL 80 on NBC Sports. Wow.
By that, I was down to a small afro.
Do you have the jacket somewhere? Do you still have that jacket?
No, I don't have that jacket.
It looked like a velour jacket right there.
Oh, thank God it wasn't.
I know.
But back when I first started doing those, I mean, you couldn't see either my hair, my ears, or my neck. So,
Well, now it's all in 4K. Last one for you, Brian. Are you retiring? Is this it for you in the business?
You know, Rich, I never say never, but I'm happy. I mean, I've spent 52 years in front of a television camera. I think that's enough for any person. If I never look into a television camera again, that's okay by me. If somebody comes along and says, hey, here's something that's interesting, and that's certainly the case, then I might do it. But, you know, this isn't a business where people run around hiring guys that, you know, over the age of 75 and saying, we'd like you to do a show for us.
I don't know. Al, come on. Al's as great as ever on Thursday night right now, Brian. Al's as good as he's ever been right now.
That's true, but he's calling a game. People are tuning in for the game.
Okay. Well, yeah. Maybe they want to. I would want to hear what you've got to say. Interviews, you're as great as they've come in terms of pulling stuff out of people and also making people think, which, by the way, despite everything being taken in, you know, on devices, and as you point out in short bursts, that still has value, Brian.
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, and one thing I'm really proudest of Real Sports is that we made people, you know, to steal a line from Jim Valvano, often in the same show, we made people laugh, we made people cry, we made people think. And then he said that was a pretty good day. I'd say it's a pretty good show.
It's pretty good 29 years. All right, TJ, do you want to just go ahead? I'll give you the last word with Brian. Just say to him what you want to say. Go ahead and see what he says. Go ahead.
Oh, well,
go ahead, TJ. Go ahead, TJ.
Brian, as someone who's watched you my entire life and kind of looked up to you in the work you've done, I don't feel like this should be the end. Is there? Did you ever give thought to maybe?
No, Beckham. You wanted to beg him.
I beg you not to end this show. We need it because very rarely do you have a show like Real Sports that will give you all the emotions. Right? There are times where you know you see a story and it makes you happy, and more times than not, you're seeing a story and it makes you're tearing up. And yet the thing is, we still look forward to that next tear up session. And it's just, we don't want to see that go. Do you ever think about maybe remixing it a little bit, changing it up? Because as someone who, we're all journalists, we all majored in journalism in this room, and storytelling is what we love. It's just, I hate to see it go, man. I really do.
There's a part of me that also hates to see it go. But everything comes to an end at some point. And I've always been a guy who'd rather leave the stage a year early than a day late. And I think this is the right time for me. Right. I could be wrong.
Well, let's keep it in mind. You know, Brady said he was gone.
True.
And then didn't, and then wasn't, you know.
But now he stayed gone.
Ish. Yeah. We don't know. There's still time. Take care of yourself, Brian. Congrats again on the 29-year run. And again, Susie wanted me to tell you in front of everybody that it was the best job she's ever had. And part of the reason why is how great you were to her and the rest of the staff. Brian.
That's sweet of her. We were better for having her. We were a better show for having her a part of it. I mean that.
Well,
thanks so very much, Rich. Look, best of the holidays to you and her and all the family.
And same to you and Hillary and the rest of your family, too. You be well.
Thanks, pal.
Thank you for everything. That's the great Brian Gumbel right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
That was great. Cannot wait to watch that tonight.
Honestly, Susie looks at everything through the lens of her time at Real Sports, which I'll be straight up with you is very difficult when she's asking me questions. It's very difficult. I'm under the withering spotlight. That's tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO and available to stream on Max, which you can do right here on Roku. When we come back, speaking of great stories and great people who bring it out, there was one last night with Drew Lock, and we'll hit that and the Seahawks before Andrew Whitworth walks in the door. That's the Rich Eisen Show, everybody. We're back here. That was great with Brian Gumbel, huh?
Awesome.
That was awesome.
And that's awesome. What we love about shows like Real Sports. Yeah, there's some exposés, and let's be honest, it's 60 minutes of sports, right?
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And then 60 minutes, try to sports version, never really was the same anyway. But you need a great storyteller to tell it, which is why they got people like, remember Frank DeFord?
Yeah.
May he rest
in
peace. And Susie loved that guy. Oh, my God. He would walk around in an ascot and a double-breasted sports coat and
classic,
you know, hold open the door for her, you know, like stuff, old school writers and reporters and serious. And you still need people who understand the moment in time when a story is right in front of them to pull it out. And I respect those people so immensely, certainly when you have an interview subject that appears to be willing to share.
Yeah.
And that happened last night on live TV, which makes it even tougher. Drew Lock took care of business for the Seattle Seahawks. Again, we were so focused at the beginning of the show, and understandably so. The Philadelphia Eagles are the defending NFC champs, having lost three in a row with a quarterback who could have been the MVP of the Super Bowl, if not the league last year, saying at the end of the three-game losing streak that they're intimating that there's some people who aren't committed enough on the team right now. So obviously that's going to get the top story. But the Seahawks, you can make the case, they needed it more last night. Mm-hmm. Okay? They needed it more last night. Because I finished my opening segment about the Eagles to say, hey, look, here's the good news. You're still a team that can win the division and play not one, but maybe two home games, being the two seed. And all you got to do is beat the Giants twice and the Cardinals once. And those are teams that appear to be beatable, although it's an any given Sunday situation. You know what I'm saying. Seattle lost four in a row, and they were losing track of the rest of the playoff race that now the Rams are sitting in a playoff spot, and the Rams have already swept them. So they're losing track with the rest of the wild card race. They needed it. And Drew Lock didn't know he was starting. We didn't know. I was doing the Westwood One radio broadcast last night, the studio. Number of times I'm like, what are we seeing? What's going on? Do you know anything? They dressed Geno.
Yep.
Just to what? Mess with everybody?
Maybe they really thought he might start.
And so Drew Lock is one of those guys who's once upon a time a starter. Then he got COVID when there was a battle for the quarterback position two summers ago. Geno got the start, became comeback player of the year. It's his team. And Drew Lock got a chance last night. Oh, by the way, Monday Night Football against the defending NFC champs. Go for it, kid. And then he's in a position on his own 8-yard line, needing to drive the field to make plays, and he made the play. Jackson Smith and Jigba. What a throw, what a catch, what a moment. And then the defense picks off Jalen Hurts again. A guy named Love gets the win for Lock and locks it down for Drew. And that's where Lisa Salters found him in the rain. You want to talk about that? How about that moment where he was after the touchdown, he looked up like Andy Dufresne, right? In the rain. That's what it looked like to me.
It was really cool.
And ESPN was all over it with the shots. And Lisa Salters steps up and speaks to Drew Locke. And I just want to say this again, because the conversation a few weeks ago was all about, as we know, sideline reporters. And what do you need him for anyway? This is what you need him for. Of the many. Certainly when there's a real pro at the mic and Lisa Salters asked the right questions and let it breathe. And this, I'm playing every last second for it because it's an amazing story that Drew Locke was telling and that Lisa Salters elicited.
Amazing won't do it justice. Amazing won't do it justice, but amazing also doesn't do justice. What the O-line, what DK did on that catch, what the receivers did, what Ken Walker, Zach Charbonnet did all game long, the tight ends, man. It takes a special group to rally around a guy that, you know, has come into his second game of the year, right? Used to the same thing all year long, same cadence, same spin of the ball, everything. For a team like that, not just the offense, the defense to rally around me tonight, man, that was amazing.
I hear some emotion in your voice.
Yeah. It's been a long time. It's been a long time. I'm just blessed. Blessed with a great group of guys, a great city, great coaching staff. It's awesome. It's a wow.
Drew, when did you even know you were going to be playing tonight?
Oh, there's a long story going into that one. But I kept the mentality that I was going to play, regardless of what was going on, how people were looking and whatnot. I was just like, you know what, you're going to go out there and play. So just be ready to play. Found out when we got here that I was going to get the nod and roll the dice, baby. Let's go.
Take us back to the touchdown pass to Jackson. Just what was the play call? Take me through.
Yeah. I mean, I'll remember that play call for the rest of my life. But we're breaking the huddle. I knew Jax had the one-on-one. Good reminder from Shane in the headset. I said, hey, Jax, if you're one-on-one, I'm throwing you this pill. Sure enough. Gave us a one-on-one look. Corner was soft. Jax hit him with some speed. Back pylon, back box throw, came down with it.
Again, Drew, we can see the emotion on your face. We can hear it in your voice. Can you just describe what you're feeling in your heart right now?
Yeah, it's so hard. It's so hard to describe the feeling of, you know, not playing for so long, or at least what was a really long time to me. And then you sit there, you watch games, you wonder, can I do this still? I haven't been out there on the field. That's the human nature of it. You get back out there last week, I'm like, you know what? I'm the man, so I can go do this. And then you got another test this week where I didn't know if I was going to play or not. Sure enough, ended up playing. We're playing the Eagles tonight. And the boys around me rallied tonight. And it just, gosh, it feels so good. It feels so good. I'm so proud of everybody tonight.
Wow, right? Wow.
That's really good.
It was great. It was great.
Drew Locke, just to share
that's
that,
really...
I'm throwing you the pill, but the boys rallied around me, and I'm still the man, right? You question him. It just shows it's such a human game.
Yeah.
Sports is such a human moment sometimes. And for him to share his fragility and his.
Yeah, the self doubt, the confidence.
Right.
Yeah, all of it.
It really was beautiful. And it makes you want to root for him. And then you know, sometimes the best question is not a question, just to have a human reaction. I can see you're emotional. Which is a way to make him feel comfortable about being more emotional. Lisa Salters just showed you again why she's the reigning Emmy Award winner for sideline reporting. It was so well done. And then you see what he's talking about with his teammates rallying around him, that he's given, like, what, heart signs to Gino, who's making it back to him? Like, is that what they were doing? They're making some sort of sign to each other?
Yeah, I don't know what exactly it was.
And
but, yeah, these guys obviously have a bond.
And here's the thing.
You know?
This is Pete Carroll's special sauce. The signs are all there. I'm sure Susie's going to talk about it on What the Football later on today because she covered Pete at USC. The signs are there on the wall. Always compete. He says it all the time. He wants everybody to compete against one another because you will then compete your hardest against your actual opponent, but you'll also stay ready for the moment and nobody takes it personally that you're competing for someone else's job. And if they do, they're out. You're not a Seahawk. or you're not a Trojan from back in the day. You're out. Don't take it personally, because at some point we're going to need you. How many times do you see, you know, after a game, a Seattle Seahawk is significantly hurt, and Pete goes, yeah, I mean, and he talks it about matter-of-factly. And you're, but your fans are like, but Pete, we just lost our player X, player Y. Because he just knows the next man up is ready for the moment, because he has prepared that person and that person is competing. And nobody on the team takes it personally. So Drew Lock is clearly competing against Geno. He was two summers ago and lost out at the time because he got COVID and couldn't compete. And obviously, Geno, you have to go with the guy who's ready to go. And then Geno made the most of it. And now here's Drew Lock in a moment, winning, essentially saving the season with the longest drive of the season for Seattle. 92 yards. And now he's going to wind up what? Handing it back to Geno? Probably so. And he's done his job. He competed. And Geno's not sitting there going, damn, is my job in jeopardy? No, he's telling him he loves him from the sideline. I get goosebumps thinking about it. That's Pete Carroll's special sauce. Along with being, what did Jim Brockmeyer call him back in the day?
He's America's oldest teenager.
Oldest teenager, like Dick Clark. Yeah. Now that Dick Clark
is
gone.
Now that Dick Clark is no longer with us.
Honestly, he's jumping around.
Wearing his hat backwards in the post-game last night. What is happening?
But that's not an act. Literally this. That's a guy who took his shirt off with DK Metcalf walking in the
room. He rides around on a scooter.
It's his special sauce. And even when you're in a four-game losing streak, right there, Rick Dalton shift. Boom. That's what happens. Always compete. They don't take it personally. They root for one another because the moment's going to hit. And Drew Lock kind of, it poured out of him. Well done by Lisa Salters. That was awesome. All around. And kudos to ESPN for letting it go. Not like, we got to go to SportsCenter. We got to go break. That was like a 2.5-minute conversation.
Yeah.
That was like practically a sit-down interview.
Yeah.
In the rain.
It was pouring.
All of it. All of it. I'm here for all of it. Great sports TV. Great sports moment. And Seattle season still alive. Yep. Andrew Whitworth coming up. That was great. So, Big Wit's coming out.
Big Wit.
Whoa.
Let me tell you something.
About how big he is?
Well, I mean, he's big.
Oh, man. Yeah.
If I won the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award.
You'd walk around with that trophy everywhere?
No. Oh. Can't do that. That's gaudy.
Okay.
I put the patch on everything.
Just everything.
Everything. Look at the guy to your left. He's wearing, he's marked up.
What are you wearing? What is your hat?
Yeah, what's the hat? Is that a Super Bowl hat?
50.
50.
I like this. I have like three or four of these. This is my favorite hat.
That hat's an 8-year-old hat.
And I wash it. I like, it's worn.
Okay.
I'm a worn-in guy. Look, it's worn in.
I'm a worn-in guy.
That's okay.
I like it worn in.
So, and he didn't win the Super Bowl. He didn't play in it. He didn't win it.
But I've been at 25.
Yeah, whatever. Great.
You've been a lot.
I've been a lot.
I have a Lombardi at my house.
If I won the Walter Payton Man of the Year, it'd be the patch right here.
Yeah.
And it would be big. And you'd be saying it's too big. Because that's what you say all the time about the Rich Eisen show gear I want.
You like big logos.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I want you to see it.
There's best dad ever. Space? You need a patch for best dad ever.
From space. Sometimes, yes, from space, Chris. If I want Walter Payton Man of the Year, I want people on Mars to know I won it. Because I'm walking around, but I draw the line at bringing the trophy everywhere.
Okay, cool.
Because that's large.
It's a big trophy.
By the way, it's a beautiful sculpture. It's a sculpture. That's not a trophy.
It's not a trophy.
That's a sculpture.
That's awesome.
Can't bring sculptures, but patches, I'd have it on everything. Witt doesn't have it because, he's more humble than me, I guess.
For the real story behind some of wrestling's biggest moments, it's Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson, too.
1995, when WCW announces they're going to be live and head-to-head with Monday Night Raw, feels like this would have been something Vince would have kind of laughed off.
No, we did not like them moving to Monday nights. There were a lot of hotels. They all carried CNN, TBS, and TNT. Vince was convinced that Ted Turner had deviously done this deal to get in the hotels and keep us out.
Something to Wrestle, wherever you listen.